to your own health and fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman with Jeff Fawcett, PhD. We come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. It's spring, and despite everything that's going on in the world, the songbirds are singing their hearts out. Although most people hearing this radio broadcast aren't living somewhere where bombs are raining down, most people these days are feeling darkness at their shoulders. The state of almost everything that matters to tender-hearted people is being attacked. I get many emails asking me what to do, what to eat, what to take, how to protect yourself. Yesterday, after a morning of succumbing to sadness, I asked myself what sustains me through the worst of it. What makes me want to stay here, be here, and keep doing what I can through grief, loss, and disappointment? The answers for me are found in stillness. The trees blowing in a heavy wind, the sound of it. Those bird songs that could break a human heart with longing. My animals walking behind me like ducklings, their warm animal company. But that's just me. For all you listening, it will be distinct, just like you are. Some things are pretty universal, though, like feeling connected, being needed, having time for reflection and recovery, and yes, taking that vitamin C 3 times a day. So what makes us more vulnerable to heartbreak, and what makes us stronger? And yes, what to eat and drink, too? Stay tuned. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Jeff Fawcett, PhD.
Thank you, Lena. Mercury is toxic. It is delivered most potently as methylmercury, also called organic mercury. The reason is this. Methylmercury is rapidly absorbed in the digestive tract. Once in the body, it happily combines with the amino acid cysteine. The body treats this new molecule as if it were the essential amino acid methionine, making it possible for mercury to be delivered to any tissue in the body and, most importantly, to cross the blood-brain barrier. Methylmercury is heavily implicated not only in a wide variety of neurological damage, but cardiovascular, immune, kidney, and liver damage as well. Our exposure to methylmercury is created in two ways. In nature, anaerobic bacteria, that is, bacteria that do not use oxygen for energy production, convert inorganic mercury into methylmercury. These bacteria are aquatic. They are in the waters of lakes, rivers, and oceans, as well as in the soil. Other creatures consume these anaerobic bacteria, including their methylmercury load. In their turn, those creatures are consumed in volume by yet other creatures along with their load of methylmercury. And so the methylmercury accumulates up the food chain in what is called bioaccumulation for obvious reasons. Since humans are at the end of many food chains, we get a load of trouble in the form of bioaccumulated methylmercury. The other source of methylmercury is fossil fuels, especially coal. Fossil fuels, of course, are mostly carbon. Fossil fuels also contain other elements, including inorganic mercury. When fossil fuels are burned, a very little bit of carbon forms a methyl group, 1 carbon, 3 hydrogens, and reacts with the little bit of inorganic mercury to form methylmercury. The exhaust of fossil fuel combustion excretes methylmercury into the air, and, of course, a whole lot more, where it is carried everywhere, inhaled and ingested by creatures, including us, and in that way enters the food chain. Not that this will come as a surprise to you, but a recent study published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science found that since 1880, the concentration of methylmercury in Pacific seabirds increased by 5 times. The findings were based on an analysis of albatross feathers stored in natural history museums, which is a good argument to support such institutions. The albatross is more or less at the top of its food chain. The factor the researchers found to be most strongly associated with how much methylmercury a particular bird had in its feathers was how high up it was in its particular food chain. The higher, the more methylmercury. The point of all this is not to encourage eating as far down on the food chain as possible. The point is that it is pretty obvious that industrial civilization powered by fossil fuels has, at the very least since the 1880s, increased the damage we suffer to our health through the effects I mentioned earlier: nerve, cardiovascular, immune, kidney, and liver damage, all of which have grown in scope and scale over the past century, and all of which are associated, one way or another, with the common plagues of our of our age, including cancer. However, my point is also not to point to fossil fuels and methylmercury as the cause of the chronic diseases from which we increasingly suffer. It is instead to point to the fact that the damage done by mercury is in the company of other factors that scientists have tried to single out as the cause of our maladies. These factors include ionizing radiation and, more recently, non-ionizing radiation, sugar and fructose, endocrine-disrupting chemicals used in agriculture and industry, petrochemicals that are the offspring of the fossil fuel economy, and on and on. All of these are the result of particular social arrangements that control how we produce things. My point is that we really don't have a good way to grasp how these social arrangements cause the spewing of and exposure to methylmercury and radiation and sugar and endocrine disruptors and all the rest of it. Instead, our social processes and our very way of thinking leads us to look for the elimination of that one thing that puts us at risk, that one thing that has our attention at the moment. This isn't a defect in us personally. It's a defect in our governance, a defect that is exploited by those who have money to be made and power to be maintained and like things just the way they are and can't imagine social arrangements being any better. These people, the captains of industry and their minions, the officials of our governing institutions, and the activists of nominally public interest organizations, actively prevent the following question from being asked in a meaningful way. Isn't there a better way to live? A way that doesn't put us and our children and our descendants at risk? I've said before that the new way of thinking in environmental health is not one toxin to one disease or even one toxin to many diseases, but many toxins to many diseases. Science, on a wide variety of fronts, is moving in this direction. However, what I want to bring to your attention is this question. Isn't it time we ask what social arrangements, the many-to-many relationships of our life together, what social arrangements both protect us and create the good life we deserve? A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett is an environmental economist, writer, and health educator who produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. Now to today's topic, which is fixing a broken heart. I think it's interesting that many ad campaigns for decades have used the headline, Express Yourself, in order to market something to you. Not literally to help you express yourself, but to sell you something that is supposed to be expressive somehow. Well, you know, oddly, expressing yourself is very good advice when it comes to fixing a broken heart. It's of course very different to express yourself by buying a pair of stiletto heels than to express yourself in the way that I'm thinking. I'm thinking more of ways of actually allowing expression to the feelings that you have, and this can be done literally by talking with other people. But it is most effective when you're doing it in some creative way, and it doesn't require that people are proficient or professional at any creative endeavor, but that you write things down, that you attempt to play some music, that you paint or create some art in any way that you can. Being an activist is a creative act. In other words, not feeling helpless for too long. Now, in terms of expressing yourself and the fact that it's good for reducing your stress response, which is a physical response, remember to be mindful of whom you're expressing yourself to in case you don't want to hear what they might have to say back. So what I'm saying here is that it's a common problem among people that people feel that they should and how important it is to be able to express their feelings. And they don't anticipate both the way that they're expressing their feelings, how personal it is when they do it, whether or not it's whether or not you're really literally talking about how you feel and not about how the other person is doing things. But it also means that there is a chance that the other person you're talking to is going to have a response to your expression and will want to express themselves back to you, and you had better be ready for that because it may not be what you're expecting or want. So it's always a good idea before you feel that you should indulge or allow yourself the freedom to express yourself to other people, that you consider what it is that you would like to get from that other person and how likely it is that that will happen. Because there are ways to be expressive without literally landing on another person. So keep that in mind as well, for your own protection. I think that one of the ways to avoid getting into a trap where you're saying to another person, well, do you not want me to tell you how I feel? Should I just never talk to you? Maybe the issue here then is to, before, if possible, before you open your mouth to express it to another person, that you do allow yourself some time to get to the bottom of what you're feeling. This is my two cents, I should say. None of this is scientific. This is what I've learned by reading research on the stress response and on grief and loss. But also, this is my two cents, okay? So taking the time to understand better what you're feeling, either by writing it down or literally spending some time with yourself, remembering that loss and grief and disappointment and even anger is very personal. It's yours. Other people may or may not understand it, but you do, and you can stay and listen to your own pain. You can even say that to yourself. You can say to yourself, I'm here, I'm staying, and I understand this pain. Now, it does require some quiet time, and even several hours of it. This is a problem that I encounter in my practice with people, is that they tell me they don't have the time, that their work has suddenly either disappeared and they're frantic, or it's they have children, or they're caretaking, or their work has exploded and become busy, and they cannot take the time. What I'm saying is you cannot not take the time, and it doesn't always mean that you have to schedule a day out, but it's one of these moments where you're putting things on a scale, and you're putting your stress load and your grief and your loss and your disappointment and your anger on one side, and then on the other side there is the time it takes for you to give that expression to yourself some voice, so that you witness what it is that's going on with you. This is the only way you're going to have an opportunity to not only reduce the damaging effects of these feelings, which are there usually for good reason. They're usually there because they're trying to clarify something to you or push you into some direction that you've not been able to go in. Or it may even just be a cry for help. You may even discover that what you really need is to find some help with this. It's very personal. Personalize it. It's probably echoing back to all the other times you felt grief, loss, disappointment, and anger. And probably, which makes it dicey, to when you were very little and helpless, which makes the feelings much more difficult and irrational feeling than when you just feel like it's something happening in the present. It's usually not, and some people have more of a load than others. Please, if I have anything to say to people, please don't be afraid to feel sorry for yourself. It tends not to last forever. And if you don't feel sorry for you, who will? And anger? Maybe it's justified. Maybe it's righteous anger. It's more likely to break you down if you ignore it. I don't believe that anger is toxic. I think anger is toxic if it's ignored and the way that you respond to it is to behave with people out of anger that has nothing to do with them, and not with you honestly examining what the anger is about. And sometimes people do things that does deserve anger, but it's usually more efficient to say, I'm angry, rather than to start breaking things in front of them. Don't ignore it. I think it's more toxic to ignore it. Just watch what you do with it. And see if it's protection from a feeling of being really, really hurt. I think men who have done some inner work will tell you that often the first place a man will go when his feelings are really hurt, whether it seems justified in the present or not, is anger. And that's a protective layer. So sometimes when you're angry, stop, breathe, feel it, see where it really is, and notice whether or not what you're really feeling is hurt. I just want to remind you that you're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, doing a show alone today called Fixing a Broken Heart. It's also a good idea when communicating with others to remember that people actually can't read your mind. Usually people can't read your mind. If someone really cares, tell them what you're feeling. Try not to tell them that it's their fault if you want them to be nice to you. And also, again, my opinion, everything isn't positive. It's not negative or toxic to have painful feelings. They're entirely appropriate when things aren't the way you want them to be and you need them to be. And my observation is that people don't get sick because they had angry and painful feelings. They seem to get sick when they never expressed them or paid any attention to them or gave themselves any time for the range of feelings that they have. And research, for what it's worth, does support this. Stress research and research into cancer and other things does support this. Please remember, some things can't be fixed. Focus on what can be fixed. Try to find something small that you can do that will take care of yourself. It will break the cycle of hopelessness, which is the most corrosive form of stress. I've said this so many times. And it can be so simple. It can be just taking yourself outside and walking around the block for a minute to get a different perspective. Taking a lie down for even 10 minutes or pulling your car over and putting the seat back and closing your eyes for 5. And even taking that vitamin C 3 times a day and eating something healthy, you know, with protein in it, because protein helps with repair. And for goodness sake, don't skip breakfast. Now, it might be worthwhile to talk about who is most vulnerable to heartbreak. I think one of the groups that there's research about is women, when their ratio of estrogen to progesterone, and I mean that this is actually now almost every woman on the planet because of the amount of xenoestrogens in the environment. It is my experience that when I test women's hormones, all women are low in progesterone. And progesterone is a calming, even sedating in some cases, hormone that balances out the excitatory effects of estrogen. So this observation that we have that women are more emotional is partially due to estrogen. And I don't think it's sexist to say this. When men's testosterone gets low and they pick up extra estrogen as they age, men use estrogen to think with and have it too, they also become more emotional and less rational. In fact, not at all the way you would expect a low testosterone man to be. In fact, they are usually withdrawn and angry and irritable. Women, when the ratio of their hormones gets skewed toward estrogen, and this happens both premenopausally, when they're still menstruating but their hormones are shifting. It can happen at a lot of different ages for women, but it usually starts at around 40. And it also can happen younger to women. And then after menopause, after the bleeding has stopped, you're left often with enough estrogen to make you really nervous and emotional, and no progesterone and usually no testosterone to speak of to kind of balance it out. So there was a paper written about a symptom that was being seen in emergency rooms. I've talked about this before. It's also in our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health, that women appear in emergency rooms with extreme heart symptoms. It seems like they're having a heart attack or something. And these symptoms usually occur after some period of stress. And what happens is that they have these heart symptoms, they get tested, and there's nothing bad is actually happening. But the symptoms are happening, and there's some changes based on the stress response, but it isn't a heart attack. And later in the paper, it explains that this is happening predominantly among women who are postmenopausal. What this means to me is that when the ratio of estrogen to progesterone is skewed toward estrogen, you have women who are on a hair trigger, when it comes to having stress. And there's no relief in this life from stress. Even if you're a fairly well-adjusted, non-neurotic person, there are things that happen. And your vulnerability to it will change based on this ratio between estrogen and progesterone. And with men, having their testosterone trend down from stress and overwork and imprudent diets and weight gain in the belly is extra estrogen and will also make them be much more on a hair trigger. Although, as I said, men usually respond in anger when they're feeling hurt or vulnerable. They're defensive. So one group of people that are going to be very, very vulnerable to literally heartbreak are going to be people whose hormone balance is out of balance. Other people who are very vulnerable to heartbreak are going to be people who are caught in some kind of depletion pattern. And what I mean by this is that stress, which you know, can be good stress too. I mean, when we're learning and working and doing things we care about or even having a love affair, our stress hormones go up. But mostly we think of stress as being those periods that we go through that are sort of unrelenting, where the work or relationships or the world, the situation in the world, is causing us to feel a kind of chronic, unrelenting stress response. And that is not the way that we're designed to function. We're designed to have an acute stressor, react to it with a fight or flight response, recover, and get over it. That's not what happens in modern life. So because, as I've said so many times, stress response occurs in a peak and valley, you'll have it, an acute stressor, your stress hormones like cortisol and the catecholamines, adrenaline and all that go up, and then they will come down if things are working properly, and during the down period, you'll feel really tired because, in fact, your body is asking you to stop and rest. That's not what people do. They drink coffee, they eat sugar, and they push on. So what happens over time is that you either get stuck in a peak or a valley, and if you get stuck in a peak, your blood sugar is high because blood sugar mobilizes the stress response. It's responsible for getting everything moving so you can run away or fight. You get stuck in high blood sugar, the cortisol level stays high, your insulin levels stay high. This is very toxic to the heart, and the blood sugar, obviously being high, is also toxic to the heart, both things. So this is cardiotoxic, as we say, as well as the stress itself, which is a chronic eek state. So you can get stuck in a high. I've talked about this endlessly. This tends to cause people to gain weight in the belly instead of, when they gain weight, gaining it everywhere. They have a lot of belly fat. And they may even be very thin in their arms and legs. It may be this odd type of... But so you've heard this from me before. The low depletion pattern is where you just never recover. And your cortisol stays down because high cortisol over a long period of time, as I said, is cardiotoxic. It mobilizes the blood sugar. It does all these things that are not good for the body. High cortisol, high insulin is even, you know, can predispose. It's a growth factor. These are growth, you know, raises your growth factors. So if you're worried about cancer, that's never good, right? So you're caught, if you get caught in the opposite, where you're in a low cortisol state, you're going to become cold, which will make you think maybe your thyroid isn't working, but it's your adrenal. People say adrenal fatigue. And I like to say you're caught in a depletion pattern rather than adrenal fatigue, because I think your adrenals can work properly. It's just that right now they are working. They're telling you to stop, and you're not listening. But you'll feel cold. You'll feel very achy, because when your cortisol is low, that's your anti-inflammatory hormone. That's why they give people cortisone when they're inflamed. But if you take cortisone externally, exogenously, your endogenous or inside production of it will go down and respond. Your body will go, "Piff, oh, there's plenty of this around, let's not make any." And then it's kind of a problem when you stop taking it. But anyway, when you're in a low cortisol, cold, achy, much more prone to getting injured and hurt, and, you know, why is my knee hurting all of a sudden? Very tired, very cold, and more allergic, more allergy stuff. Again, you're not your anti-inflammatory steroids, your native ones, are not working. And in fact, in this pattern, your thyroid doesn't work well either because there's a handshake. So that's a depletion pattern. Anyone who's caught in a depletion pattern like that is going to be much more vulnerable to having symptoms of a broken heart. They're going to be much more emotionally vulnerable. If you're depleted, you can't rise to anything in that situation. And you're more likely to continue to feel more broken down and more broken down. Am I skipping anybody else who's going to be vulnerable to that? Obviously, chronically ill people. I think that's a given. There are a number of things. I've just intuned that if you rebalance your hormones, you will have a stronger base. Your margins will be bigger. So you may still get tired and depleted, but you'll have much more of a sense of how to bounce back. So hormone balance for both genders is helpful in terms of protecting you from feeling completely despairing and brokenhearted all the time or angry. Additionally, I've intuned that if your blood sugars are out of control, then you're going to be more vulnerable over time. You're going to be either in a constantly angry state or you're going to be in a constantly depleted, depressed state. And one of the things that you might intune here, but if you haven't, I'll say it again. So these are situations where you are now rather sensitive to what you eat. And your nutrient density is going to be critical during this period. So eating foods that sustain and protect your blood sugars from spikes is going to be important. So these diets are the ones I often talk about, whether you're a vegetarian or a carnivore or omnivore type. Nobody's a real straight carnivore. Then you need additional protein during periods of stress. Or if you live in today's world with ionizing radiation swirling around, non-ionizing radiation swirling around, toxins from the BP spill, depleted uranium flying over here from the wars, the sadness of the environmental destruction we're witnessing, the pain and suffering of people across the world that we know about, and the economic disaster, and the disappointment we all have in what's being done here in this country that we live in. That stress, I mean, it's working on people. There are some people who would just say, I'm not political, I don't listen, I just don't. That's fine. For the rest of us, eating more protein is for repairing the tissues. It maintains a healthy blood sugar. You don't need to eat a pound of steak, but you do want to have, in fact, that's not even a healthy thing to do. You want to keep your diet in balance, but you want to make sure you're getting protein at every meal. And you must never skip breakfast or your blood sugars will go crazy and your body will think you're starving. And you'll whether you feel like you have no appetite or not, have some small protein thing in the morning. Protein in the morning and protein in bits throughout the day. If you're trying to keep your blood sugars down, then additionally, you don't want to eat any form of sugar. I don't care whether it's a natural sugar or not. If you're really vulnerable to stress, if you're somewhat unbalanced and you feel you certainly know that your blood sugars are unbalanced, even eating honey, certainly unless you can eat very tiny, some people can do a teaspoon of honey in their tea and they stop. If you're that kind of person, I can't argue, but most people who are in these patterns that I'm describing cannot stop at a teaspoon, so skip it. That means none of the natural sugars or unnatural sugars, none of the artificial sweeteners can be used, or they will have an effect on your blood sugars. And additionally, eating too many starches and sugars, too much fruit, eating a smoothie for breakfast, not having eating way too much fruit and not having real, honest-to-God food will also skew your blood sugars. So protein, fat, which causes a great amount of satiety and also helps you make happy chemicals in your brain, makes you feel better, and vegetables and things like that, is going to sustain you in terms of your blood sugars and protect you from this blood sugar nonsense that makes everything worse. So this is Lena Berman, Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm doing a show today called, what am I calling it? Fixing a Broken Heart. It's time for me to take a brief musical break. I hope that you'll stay with me. I'll be back after this.
help, I have done it again. I have been here many times before.
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman, doing a show today called Fixing a Broken Heart. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our archive, CD copies, our book. There's a whole lot more. It's all at yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out. You can also reach us by emailing us at admin, at yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out again. And I am, as I said, trying to fix the music here. Doing a show today on... Oh, I'm having a very uncooperative thing happening here. Doing a show today, again, on fixing a broken heart. So, I'd like to just talk for a moment about who else is vulnerable to this situation. Some things that I didn't anticipate, or I didn't talk about earlier. Another group that's very vulnerable to this is people who never take vitamins. It's extraordinary how protective vitamins are, and I've said it endlessly. You do not get everything that you need from food. It's just not possible, especially not given the kinds of exposures that modern people have. never mind the depletion of the soil. It's just, we are, Jeffrey just gave you an editorial about mercury. I mean, it's just a small part of what else is going on. So when people call me and ask me about radiation, the first thing is always to look at your vitamin density and take all sorts of antioxidants and things that will give you a fighting chance, at least, of maintaining detoxification pathways and protecting your whole body. So if you're not taking vitamins, that makes you very vulnerable to a depletion pattern as well. Vitamin C, 2 to 3 times a day, always, always has to be repleted, as are other antioxidant vitamins, more than once a day. And at the very least, take that multivitamin. Some extra vitamins that help with stress and recovery are the fat-soluble antioxidants like vitamin A and vitamin D, although it's not an antioxidant, is extremely important, and people generally don't get enough sun. So taking extra D, even as much as 3 to 5,000 once a day, if you're getting sun on your skin between 12 and 2, without wearing sunscreen, you can cut back on that amount. Vitamin E, and A and E both are fat-soluble antioxidants. You can take them when you're taking your vitamins in the morning. They can all your fat solubles can be taken in the morning. And you can take some extra omega-3s. Omega-3s, as fish oil, are more easily utilized by most people. If there's a problem for you with that, remember that if you have a history of diabetes or your blood sugars are out of control, using linoleic forms like hemp seed or flax seed, you're probably not going to be able to convert these vitamins to long-chain omega-3s. So the fish oils or the ones that are made from sea vegetables are going to be better for you. If that's not an issue, then those other fats can be useful as well. Just make sure you're taking extra vitamin E to protect those oils in your body. So another group that's going to be vulnerable are comfort food addicts and those with sugar cravings, which makes stress much worse. When you take, when you're eating fat, you've got better satiety. You're going to be less likely to have sugar cravings, and it increases happy chemicals. Sugar increases happy chemicals, but in the meantime, it increases your stress response, which makes everything collapse later. Another group that doesn't do well under grief and loss and disappointment are people who never stop. And you know who you are. Now, again, people tend not to like to hear this from me, but I keep saying it, and I'm going to keep saying it. Being plugged in is going to make you more wired. Having a high exposure to wireless is going to make you wired. It's well known that among the health effects of non-ionizing radiation, and this is the wireless microwave radiation from cell towers and wireless routers and cell phones and devices in your house, increases all of the markers for stress in your body. The heat shock proteins, which are a marker for stress in the body, all go up in this situation. Your mast cells, which produce histamine and are responsible for your immune system, all become granulated and inflamed. And these are credible scientific pieces of scientific research. There's additional research I've cited before, which is that if you just, never mind putting the cell phone against your head, if the cell phone and the wireless devices are on 24/7 and you're getting a constant low level, this is very low level exposure, you're leaving yourself open to a breach in the blood-brain barrier, which protects your brain from chemical intrusion, so the chemicals start leaching in. So you have a problem then with increased chemical sensitivity and problems with your liver. Additionally, there's tremendous increases, especially among children, of leukemia and all these provocative diseases, which are increased by inflammation. So, but on a very low level, sort of just first step kind of thing, everybody, even the people who love wireless, know that it increases your energy and makes you feel more awake. It's like drinking coffee. And brain research confirms this. It's also very addictive. People become very addicted, and they talk about feeling anxious and afraid if they can't check their emails. People can't sit in a movie theater and not hear that bing on their smartphone and check their email. This should tell you something about the way that these technologies are interacting with your brain. And now with the new information that the iPhone is now collecting information, private information about you to be used in ways that we can't even anticipate, I think that people need to step back and think about how much they are plugged in and how much this is necessary. From my perspective, these technologies exploded in the last 10 to 12 years, 15 maybe at the most. And honestly, I worked as a professional before I did what I do. I was a, this is funny to admit this, talk about stress. I was an advertising professional. I was an art director. And I freelanced for a long time. And having an answering machine with a remote was a big step toward making me not have to have somebody answer. You know, you didn't need to have a phone answering group. You didn't have to have whatever. I can't even remember what that's called anymore, but it's so old now. But just having an answering machine with a remote meant that I could contact people anytime, and it was never a problem for people to get hold of me. We all managed to run businesses just fine without having a cell phone on us. So I know that young people are starting now to understand what's going on with this, and they're beginning to experiment with having people phone their landline phone voicemail, which is a much more reliable voicemail system, and then they just turn off their cell phone during the day, and periodically they check to see if they have messages, and then if they need to, they call, and then they turn the cell phone off again, and they feel better. They feel less anxious. They feel less nervous. They feel less on alert at all times. So, yes, we're living in a world where a lot's going on. Yes, the social networking and the cell phones have been implicated in helping these revolutions, but there are lots of movements going on, particularly the anti-cellular, anti-cell phone and wireless people, the anti-smart meter people, are all working without using smartphones to communicate with each other. I mean, people use wired internet connections and stuff. So what I'm trying to say is that letting go of technology as the end-all, be-all to protect us and promote us. I mean, keeping in mind I'm a radio show host, I love technology. I'm sitting in front of a computer right now. I'm using equipment. I'm not saying that you have to ignore or pull away from this, but I'm saying whatever you use, unplug regularly and have some contact with nature. What's left of it, while it's still here. Go stand in a park with your shoes off, put your tootsies on the ground, and breathe. Listen to the birds. We all have a strong connection to nature. And when people start talking about human evolution and about how we're going to become, we're going to have plugins, technological plugins that will enhance our brains, that will have contact lenses that are screens so we can surf the internet while we're walking around and have radio transceivers. We have all of those tools within us. We are empathetic creatures. We are creatures that in the wild can identify a person by their footsteps on the ground, by how their footsteps look. People who are more primitive can see somebody in the distance way off and know who they are. We are empathetic creatures. We can communicate with each other. We can sense what the other person is feeling. We can tell all of these things if you allow yourself to connect back with your essential human nature. We have those skills. We can improve those skills by not giving way to the church of technology. These are tools. They are not going to save us. Only we can do that. And for your health, reconnect, stop, unplug. If you have insomnia, if you work night shifts, your stress levels, your heat shock proteins are going to be enormously high. You will not be able to protect yourself from a broken heart. You're listening to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a show called Fixing a Broken Heart. So, food allergies. Another group of people who are going to be vulnerable are people with food allergies, because you're going along and all of a sudden you eat the wrong thing. You don't know whether you ate it half an hour ago or yesterday, and wham, you're in a world of hurt. You feel brain fog. Your brain doesn't work. You feel your face is red. You're exhausted all of a sudden, or you feel agitated and you don't know what hit you. Incidentally, all of these allergies get worse if you have too much exposure to wireless. I promise, I am working with people. I'm a consultant. I see this. It makes it worse. So what are the heart protective vitamins? I talked about the basics to protect you from stress, but the heart protective vitamins, those of you who listen to the show, you can actually repeat this with me. It's CoQ10, CoQ-10. And higher doses of CoQ10 work really well. It's a shame it's so expensive, but you can actually find it sometimes in pure powder, and that it's a little cheaper. You can put it on the tip of your tongue and don't inhale. Take a sip of water and take it. But upwards of 100 milligrams of CoQ10 three times, or even 150, or even more, depending on your energy, this is going to boost your mitochondrial function. It is remarkable. It heals your gums if you have gum problems. It's synergistic with carnitine, which is a natural occurring amino acid-like substance that's in red meat. And those of you who don't prefer to eat red meat, and I don't want to lecture you about that, should take carnitine. L-carnitine in the form just L-carnitine can be purchased in pharmaceutical-grade capsules. And yes, I agree, pharmaceutical companies make these, but the research on vitamins, the things that I see with people is that for the most part, people respond very well to these vitamins. The food-based vitamins, very low dose, and you can't get most of these things in a food-based vitamin. And can we say processed? They're very highly processed food-based vitamins. So carnitine is vegetarian. It has no meat in it, and it protects the heart with CoQ10. These are for protecting your muscles and increasing the strength of your energy cells and muscles. Acetyl L-carnitine, the acetylated form, is particularly good for brain function. So both forms are good. Obviously, B12, B6, folic acid, these are all heart protective vitamins. Some people do very well taking trimethylglycine. If you don't do well on trimethylglycine, you'll feel good on it and then you'll feel crappy on it. So you'll know if it's not working for you, just stop it and maybe stop taking it for a while and take it again. Or if you like it and it feels good all the time, take it. Who else is vulnerable to this broken-hearted breakdown stuff? Honestly, people from horrible families. And I'm sorry, I don't buy that it happened in the past and you can just move on. The only people who say that to me are people who didn't have horrible families. So I think that it is possible to not self-identify as a person who experienced trauma. I think you can not introduce yourself by saying, "Hi, this happened to me as a child." I think it's possible. In fact, if you listen and witness the parts of you that remain little and sad and hurt, that you will find that you probably can move on. And it is in the past. And what happened, happened. And now you're a grown-up and you have this creative problem of how to make your life work. But to suggest that you can just walk it off is foolish. It just denies the human condition, which is full of disappointment and, as I said, grief and loss. And you know, if you can shake it off and move on, and you don't have any ill effects from that, you're a very lucky person. You might end up, not going to heaven, but you're a very lucky person. But honestly, most of the rest of us have places where we're very vulnerable and somebody can touch that place and you're off and running and you know you're in trouble because you're off and running and you know at that moment it's something that's old because otherwise you would just tell them to go away, or you just wouldn't take them seriously. But when it goes in like an arrow, you know that it's from something that happened in the past, and just moving on can mean pulling back, protecting yourself, sitting quietly and tending to yourself, or getting angry and saying, "I'm angry at you," without acting out on them, just getting it over with. When it all gets to be too much, and it does for most of us, please just stop. until you know what you need to do next. Do regular check-ins with yourself. Now, exercise is really important for grief, loss, disappointment, and anger because these are fight or flight feelings. These are stressors, and we are designed to respond to stress with this mobilization of these stress hormones. We are supposed to move. That's what we're supposed to do when it happens. So moving, taking a walk around the block, literally, not just counting to 10, but walking around the block, really works because you're working on what you're doing. You're doing what your body is asking you to do. Sitting in a meeting, being stuck is not so good. Go out and walk afterwards. Move. And so exercise or movement, you don't have to think of it as exercise, just moving will relax you. It will affect your mood, and it will improve all the parameters that protect you. It's going to boost your detoxification pathways. It mobilizes and naturalizes your hormones. It reduces the stress hormone effect. It's extraordinary. You know, when I do exercise shows, I say things like, if you knew that 20 minutes every day of this thing would give you this much life, would you do it? Well, that's exercise. Now, I want to say something about using, so there's a, homeopathy is wonderful for people who are suffering, like, you know, the way I'm talking here, brokenheartedness. It's wonderful for that. It's extremely individual. There are books that will help you, kind of everyday homeopathy type books. There are several that are good. But basically, you can either, there's like famous homeopathic remedies like Ignatia Imara, I-G-N-A-T-I-A, Ignatia, Imara, I-M-A-R-A, like a 30C, in a pellet. If you're lactose sensitive, just either put it in a little water, swirl it, take a quarter teaspoon under your tongue, and then spill it out, and just leave that under your tongue, or put the pellets under your tongue for 10 seconds, spit them out. That one may work, but you may need something entirely different. It's very individual. What's less difficult to self-diagnose is flower essences. And there is a wonderful book on flower essences. We've interviewed Vinton McCabe. His book, The Healing Bouquet, is the book that I like the best. And under Remedies for Those Who Despair, there's larch. And just to give you an idea of how these work, larch for those who are self-conscious, elm for those who are overwhelmed, usually helping other people, oak for those who are overly responsible, another caretaker, crab apple for those who are perfectionists. I don't know anything about that. Willow for those who are bitter. Pine for those with guilt. Sweet chestnut, I love this one, for those who are in despair. I love sweet chestnut. It works beautifully. And another favorite of mine is Star of Bethlehem for those who are in shock. And shock is what a lot of us are in. Some of these are in Rescue Remedy, but each one of these you can take them all if you fit, you know, you read that and you go, wow, that's true, take them all. You can put them in a bottle with 3/4 water, 3 drops of each, and then add another little squirt of, you know, some kind of distilled alcohol to preserve it, like just some vodka or something, or brandy if you like. Now, lastly, as the clock ticks down, radiation. I'm getting lots of people contacting me. What am I supposed to eat? What am I supposed to take? What am I supposed to do? Honestly, this is coming over. We are having this. It is here. We are being exposed to much more radiation than we usually are from Japan. How much? You know what? It doesn't matter because there's no safe dose of these isotopes. There is no safe dose. Everybody who studies this agrees. The work of John Goffman, the many years of work, he agrees. Dr. Sternglass, all of these other physicians who have done the research all agree. There is no safe dose. So this fiddling around with the allowable levels is horrible. And the fact that the governments and public health places are not helping people to sort this out is terrible. And they're doing it because they don't want people to panic. But It's really a serious problem. We are being bombarded. There are very small things you can do. There are websites there. I know Mercola has stuff up, and people are telling me, miso. Well, miso, you know, it could have a protective effect, but you've got to watch it because it's got genistins, and while the genistins can protect you from cancer, that if you take too many of them, you're going to knock your thyroid off, and your thyroid is already at risk in this situation. So you have to do this right. And many people are very allergic to soy, even in lovely miso, which is a good form if you're going to do soy. But that one thing is not going to do it. The reason that there's a problem here is that these isotopes do not behave like the radiation that we get from airplanes and rocks and bananas and all this. They are internal emitters. They are a form of radiation that we're not adapted to physically. These are man-made forms of radiation. It's us that split the atom. And they lodge in our organs and continue to emit for decades, which is why cancer shows up so much later and birth defects and all this. You can filter your water with a reverse osmosis filter. I do suggest that. You can drink distilled water. Be sure to store it in glass and cover it because it scavenges chemicals. You can take upwards of up to, I would say no more than this on a daily basis. If you have no thyroid disease, you could take 30 milligrams. That's a lot of iodine, probably in potassium iodide form. That's a high dose of iodine, but according to the show we did on iodine, you could go up to 30 milligrams a day. That could have a protective effect in so that your thyroid doesn't suck up the radioactive thyroid. If you know that levels, if they were doing a responsible job and they told us it's really on its way and the levels are about to go up, you take a bolus dose of between 120 to 150 milligrams of iodide, potassium iodide. Boost your if you have a thyroid disease, one bolus dose is okay, but don't keep taking it. High doses of iodine over a long period of time can also depress your thyroid, so don't do that. Boost your antioxidants, take extra lipoic acid, avoid any extra chemical load, probably watch it with milk products. Apple pectin is supposed to help, but mostly get busy, get active, get involved so that this stops. So that's what I have to say. I hope this helped your heart. It helped mine. Thank you for listening. I'm Lena Berman. Information about your own health and fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our archive, CD, copies, all of it's at yourownhealthandfitness.org. Email us, admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett. Oh, incidentally, one last thing. Don't get dehydrated. So, filter your water, but do drink it. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom.